Welcome to NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here, joined by Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Oh, it's been a good week.
Always a good week. Not so good for the Lakers, which always seem to be number one on our list here after these TNT Thursday night matchups. So let's get right to it. The Lakers were in New York to face the Knicks last night. We pretty much got the result we expected, right? I mean, nobody was expecting the Lakers to all of a sudden magically turn it around, beat the Knicks team that's, you know, the best in the Eastern Conference. But, you know, the way it happened had to have been pretty disheartening. You know, I mean, the Knicks just got going right from the start. You know, two quick three-pointers from Carmelo Anthony. He just goes nuts for 22 points in the first quarter. And, you know, the game was pretty much over from there. So, what are your thoughts on the Lakers? You know, nobody is expecting a quick turnaround at this point because we've seen too much of the bad side of this team with the lack of defensive effort and the struggles on offense. But how much longer, you know, can we expect the Lakers to be playing like this?
Yeah, I think Mike D'Antoni would like to know the answer to that question too. I mean, the defensive, it's not even just a system thing. I'm not even going to blame D'Antoni as much for that as just they know where to be. I mean, these rotations that the Lakers are running are not some complex, magical new NBA system they have to learn. It's pretty standard stuff of helping the helper, and they're not doing it. And that's just effort and focus. And part of that's got to follow the coach, but at some point that's got to follow the players. I mean, they're feeling this heat, and still they come out every game, and they're just off. Their rotations are terrible, and it goes all the way through the lineup. Kobe's been bad about it. Dwight Howard's been late on stuff. I mean, it's every one of them.
How much of this is the roster right now? I mean, you know, finally we got Darius Morris out of the starting lineup last night, which was nice to see because he's just been brutal. But, you know, again, then you come back with Chris Duhon, you know, who's not exactly, you know, Steve Nash in his prime or anything like that. You had, you know, Robert Sacre, for goodness sakes, you know, getting some minutes last night in New York. And then, you know, Devin Ebanks playing 34 minutes. I mean, this is not the all-star, you know, Hall of Fame stacked roster that we expected to see here.
Now, are you suggesting that putting Antoine Jameson into the starting lineup does not improve your defense?
I just might be.
they really miss Gasol. I think on that end in particular, Gasol gets, you know, all that kind of soft stuff that I find rather, BS, frankly.
Right.
But he's a solid defender. He's a good pick-and-roll defender. He gets the rotations. He's professional. He's long. You know, they miss that inside as well. And they miss depth at the point guard spot, like you said. I mean, it's Steve Blake on top of Steve Nash. For all of Steve Blake's flaws, he would be a great improvement over the guys they're rolling out there right now for entire games. So the roster and where they're at is part of it, but the Lakers have to be looking at roster additions. They have to be looking at bigger changes. And on the free agent market, I mean, Delonte West is probably the best point guard out there nobody's got, but he comes with all kinds of baggage and issues. And after that, you're talking about Pargo, who was cut by the Wizards, and the Lakers are considering that. I mean, that's how desperate I think that they've gotten, that they're looking for anything to shake this up.
Well, yeah, and you saw the Grizzlies working out Mike Bibby this week, so that just shows you there's not really a lot of available talent out there, you know, at the point guard spot or really anywhere else. I mean, Delonte West can defend, he can shoot, but again, that's a lot of issues to bring into already a team that's dealing with, you know, probably more than their fair share of them.
I love the idea of Meta World Peace and Delonte West on the same team for my own personal amusement, but I don't necessarily know that that's good for the Lakers.
Yeah, it would be pretty good from a content standpoint for the site, though.
Yes, exactly. it's all about how the site goes for me, really.
Well, and then on the Knicks side of things, you know, Carmelo Anthony went out with that sprained ankle. Didn't appear to be anything too serious, and again, they're not going to risk it with the game being such a blowout. How sustainable is the Knicks' three-point shooting? That's come up recently because, you know, they lead the league and made three-pointers per game, which is, again, why it was kind of ridiculous to me that the Lakers didn't try to focus on taking that away. But, you know, how long can that go on? You know, J.R. Smith's lighting it up. They got Steve Novak. Felton can shoot the three. Is that something that the Knicks can rely on as the season goes on?
You cannot leave Sheet off the list. Never leave Sheet off the list. You know, the thing is, if you watch how the threes they're getting, it's drive and kick stuff a lot of times. I mean, Felton gets into the paint a lot. Carmelo is playing fantastic getting into the paint, but it's not the first pass. It's not just drive and kick. It's drive and kick and pass, and they're getting it to that second and third guy. They're playing so well together that the looks they're getting from three are really good. Yeah, I think at some point a lot of this is going to come back to earth, and especially, you know, in the playoffs, teams will defend that better and be sharper on their rotations. But right now, in the regular season, that's going to keep up at a pretty high level. I mean, I don't know that they're going to sustain this level, but I think that they are going to be a good three-point shooting team as long as they keep moving the ball like that.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there with the ball movement. I mean, and that's why last night was such a glaring sight to see for the Lakers, because it's completely the opposite of what the Lakers do offensively, right? I mean, Kobe will just take games over. He's just like, all right, nobody else is getting it done. You know, Carmelo's lighting it up, so I can do the same thing for us. Problem is, he can only do it for, you know, short stretches. But yeah, I would agree with you. I think the Knicks' three-point success will continue to some, at, you know, on some level. And again, we'll just have to see in the postseason if teams are able to sort of shut that down.
Yeah, and the great part is, well, Woodson's getting credit for that, and certainly he's the coach of the Knicks right now.
Yeah,
a lot of that was stuff D'Antoni installed in terms of positioning and the players he got on that roster and their understanding of spacing and ball movement that are coming to fruition now. And you look at the Lakers, and they are nowhere near that.
No, exactly right. And, you know, personnel is a big part of that. They, you know, the Knicks have those guys that can knock down those open threes, and the Lakers, you know, clearly do not. So, all right, well, let's turn to the second half of the TNT doubleheader. Not that I don't think a lot of people may have tuned in for that one. Late game Thursday night, the Blazers hosting the San Antonio Spurs. We actually got the Spurs stars playing last night, as opposed to the last time they were on the second night of a back-to-back in a nationally televised game. But, you know, the result wasn't really the desired one for San Antonio. Damian Lillard went off for Portland. Blazers got a nice win at home over the Spurs. And wanted to ask you about Damian Lillard. He's looked every bit as much of, you know, the Rookie of the Year candidate that many thought he'd be as we entered the season. His draft position rose quite a bit. I think he was taken sixth overall. Does he have the Rookie of the Year race pretty much on lockdown at this point, especially with Anthony Davis missing time early on due to injury?
Yeah, that gave him a huge advantage in the race. I mean, we're 20 games in. It's a little early for anybody to have anything on lockdown, but he's got a huge lead because of Anthony Davis's injury. Davis is the only other guy playing at this level. I mean, we've seen flashes from Harrison Barnes, and you know, if you want to see a future gunner in action, you can go watch Deion Waiters play. But Lillard is the guy, and he shows a real maturity in his game. His ability to when to pass, when to drive, his kind of hesitation moves, and how to use his footwork and spacing to get shots is fantastic. It's a much more mature player. And I think part of that's, you know, 4 years of college, and part of it's 4 years of college where he was the guy. You know, this wasn't 4 years of college at North Carolina where everybody was talented and the ball gets shared. It was 4 years of him having to do all the playmaking and all the decision-making. And because of that, he's come out a much better player. And yeah, it's a different game in the NBA and the guys are bigger and faster and longer, but it's still the same decision-making process. And he's very good at it.
Yeah, the thing I really like about Lillard is that you could see from, you know, even from the first couple games in the season, that his vision, you know, right? I mean, he just sees the floor like a much more experienced player. And that's really what I like about his game. But also, he has the athleticism. He can go to the rim and dunk, you know, in traffic. He can shoot the ball a little bit. And I don't know. I mean, it's going to be tough for Anthony Davis to catch up unless he just turns some monster defensive performances once he gets completely healthy. How much of Lillard, though, is sort of the opportunity before him in Portland? I mean, he wouldn't have gotten necessarily that many minutes or that much run on a different team in a different situation.
Yeah, and not only that, he's got good players around him. I mean, he's got LaMarcus Aldridge. He's got Nicholas Batum, who hit big shots, you know, against the Spurs.
Yeah.
He's got some guys around him who can play. But, you know, I still go back to what a scout had told me, you know, early, you know, before the draft last year, which is, GMs are a little bit afraid of him because he was coming out of this tiny school in a tiny conference. And when you miss on those guys, GMs hear about it. And they were like, everybody knows he can play. It's a question of how big a risk are you willing to take on a guy out of a small school. Credit Portland. They took the risk, and they're going to reap the benefits not only this year, but I mean, this is a guy who, even if he doesn't have the great upside and, you know, curve of some of these guys because he spent 4 years in college, right now, if you got 10 years at this level of play out of Damian Lillard, that was a heck of a pick.
No question about it. All right, well, let's turn our attention to another West Coast team in the Golden State Warriors, who are a nice story right now, on a little bit of a win streak, getting all those wins on the road. Most recently in Miami against the Heat, where they got that nice last-second layup to beat Miami on their home floor. A lot of talk about, are the Warriors for real after that win in Miami? What's your take on the improved squad in Golden State?
Yeah, it's amazing. If you put a bunch of shooters on the floor, you can score points.
It's that easy.
You know, Stephen Curry is healthy. That is huge. I mean, he is a good, solid point guard. He doesn't have to mess with trying to share the ball with Monta Ellis. And look, Harrison Barnes, once he becomes consistently aggressive and improves his decision-making, is going to be a fantastic player. You've got Klay Thompson, who's his game's really coming around, and he hasn't done great this year, but his game is coming around, and he's learning how to get his shots in this league, and they're going to start to fall. They're a fun team to watch. They're up-tempo. They're entertaining. I was one of those guys who thought Mark Jackson was a mistake hire, and I may well be eating crow on that, because that's a fun team to watch, and they're going to get Andrew Bogut back, and if he comes back anywhere near his old self and can be a defensive guy in the paint and move the ball as a big, they get a whole lot better faster.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're piling up a lot of wins early in the season. So they're definitely in the playoff picture. I think the signing of Stephen Curry has pretty much been validated at this point, right? I mean, he was struggling through injuries at the end of last season, had the ankle again at the beginning of this season, got that big contract. Some people were kind of scratching their heads saying, really, do you want to build your team around this guy? But now that he's healthy, we're seeing that, yes, you know, he's definitely that caliber of player. And you mentioned Bogut. That's just going to be insane when he comes back, because, you know, he'll anchor that defense, and, you know, I can only see him getting better from this point once they get him back.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans don't realize Bogut, when he was healthy back in Milwaukee before the elbow and ankle injuries, was probably the best defensive center in the game, or up there with the elites. I mean, not just a good defensive center, an elite Tyson Chandler, Dwight Howard type of defensive center. So that is a huge addition if and when he comes back, right?
Okay, and now we are lucky to have with us here on the Pro Basketball Talk podcast, Kenny Anderson, a 14-year NBA veteran, a guy who was an all-star, one of the legendary Net players, and the best point guards of his generation. You know, I got to start with the Nets. I mean, you're a New York guy, a New York high school basketball legend, and now you've got the Nets where you played from Jersey moving back home. Do you like the move, or did you like him better in Jersey?
I guess me, you know, the tradition that the Nets had was awesome. You know, me having the opportunity to go back to the metropolitan area to start my career, being that I'm from New York, was a great opportunity for me. But it's also great now that Brooklyn and Brooklyn Nets is in Brooklyn, and then the Knicks, and two teams and not far from each other. But they have to build their tradition up, you know, in Brooklyn to overcome the Knicks. It may never happen, you know. The Knicks have too much tradition going on for themselves right now.
Yeah, they may never be the everybody's favorite team, but do you think they can carve out a niche there? Is the market big enough?
Yeah, it's big enough. You know, they got getting DeRon Williams and Joe Johnson there. They got a great start again. The franchise, the face of the franchise, and now they got to win games. They're getting to the playoffs and, you know, be successful on the court. And then, you know, it may happen. But we had a good team in the New Jersey Nets and a great era, Chicago Bulls era, when there was great Cleveland teams, the Knicks, Nets, my Net team with Derek Coleman, Ivan Petrovic, who, you know, we still probably couldn't overcome the Knicks. And one year we beat them every year in the regular season. But, you know, we still couldn't overcome that because of all the tradition that the Knicks had.
You're kind of one of those great quick point guards and kind of a traditional point guard, a guy who got a lot of assists, who could certainly score and get his, but really was a floor general. Are there guys you watch out there playing now that remind you of you?
Yeah, I guess, you know, a little bit Brandon Jennings remind me of me, but he's a little more, you know, I think he has to work on his, I guess, his shot selection. I think he's doing a better job at it this year. But he's more of a, you know, score first point guard in Milwaukee. But his game reminds me of mine somewhat. But you got the Chris Pauls, the Rondos, Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose is not very much different than me. He's so explosive. He's also a scoring point guard that can pass. So, you know, it's a lot of different point guards out there. But they got a great group of point guards right now for the league. So it's very exciting to watch them. You know, watch the point guards of today.
Yeah. And you, I mean, it's a different era in some ways, in that you do have not only Derrick Rose, but guys like Russell Westbrook, who were really kind of score first and then look to pass point guards who are really kind of driving the offense in a different way than the way you did or the way Chris Paul does in a lot of ways now. Is that something that you saw back in when you were playing as well, or is that kind of a trend as basketball, how players are evolving and how the game's evolving?
Well, it's evolving, but I think nowadays it's kind of interesting because you got a lot of point guards. You know, Russell Westbrook, you know, I loved him at, you know, watched him in college, and he was like a two guard converted into a one. So it's been taking some time for him to adjust his game, but he's doing a hell of a job this year at it. Making better decisions, getting guys the ball. He worked on a mid-range game. He's just so explosive also. But it's a changed game now. The NBA has changed. The players, the size, the athletic ability, you know, has changed. And it's exciting. The NBA is big right now.
Yeah. You think you could fit in still?
Yes, I think I can. I'll be in that mold of a Chris Paul. I think I'd be in the mold of a Chris Paul. I could fit in any era.
You know, you are also one of the true legends of New York City high school basketball, a player who had a lot of fame and a lot of popularity and notoriety, like before you went to Georgia Tech and before you went to the NBA. And with that came, you know, some questions in the media and a lot of things. You were going through things before you came in that a lot of players do now. We're talking about guys like Andrew Wiggins, who gets a lot of publicity, obviously. But a lot of players now are hyped up in a way that you were long before this became the trend. Were there lessons you learned you wish you could pass on to these guys about how to make that adjustment?
No, I think I did pretty well with it. I don't have no gripes about that. You know, high school, I was everywhere. Back at New York. Daily News, back on Newsday, Post, New York Times, the big articles on me when I was 13, 14 years old. It's molded me and made me the person I am today. And I've always known how to, with the help of my mentor, my high school coach, always knew how to, you know, deal with the media, you know, and how to be sociable. And it also helped me to be sociable also, you know, at a young age to adults. A lot of kids nowadays don't even know how to talk. How to hold a conversation. And along the way, you're gonna make statements you might not have, you know, you regret. But hey, that's life. You know what I mean? And nowadays with the social media, these young kids get more attention. Some little guys are not even worthy of it. But that's the entitlement of some of these young kids. They think that they made it already and they haven't done anything. So. You know, with me, my high school coach and my mentor, they leveled me off. They taught me how to use the media to my advantage. And I think I did a very good job with it.
Right. You know, you were also a playground legend, a guy who brought a lot of flair and kind of New York-style playground play to his game and to the floor. There is a long, littered list of guys by the side of the road who are fantastic players there who could never really transition to organized basketball, in a sense. Like, what did you do, and how did you make that transition?
I made the transition. I give a lot of credit to my mentor, Vincent Smith, and I always say to some of the playground legends, hey, you might have been better than me, man, but you didn't have to disappoint. You disappoint with your work ethic, you disappoint with listening to details, the disappoint, you know, that I had, you didn't. So that's why you didn't make it. And that's just how I feel about it. I just had my support team was on point. They told me, you know, how to go about it. So I was able to play in the playgrounds. I was able to play, you know, structured basketball at Archbishop Molloy High School. It all started for me. My high school coach taught me how to be a leader at a young age by me playing the varsity. One of the only freshmen, I think with Kareem, back then, that ever played varsity for 4 years in a row, made me become a leader at an early age. And my dedication and my work ethic was set by my high school coach. You know, that's where, you know, it puts me ahead of some of these other guys who've been playground legends. They don't have the discipline to do the things they need to do, not only on the basketball court, but in school. You know, academics is really, all I did in high school was go to school and then play basketball. That was it. there was no more time for anything else. And I was going to do that because I was, I wanted to make it so I can, you know, take care of my mother, get her out of the struggle. So that's just what my motivation.
That's great. What are you doing now with your life? I know you're actually, I think, coaching some high school ball, and I know you're also working with Thuzio on some stuff.
Yeah, I'm working at, I took a job for the last 2 years at Posnick Jewish Day School. I'm a high school coach, a varsity high school coach, and it's going well. I love teaching the kids, and we're trying to build a basketball program, a sports program at Posnick, and, we'll see. You know, I'm trying to get some talented Jewish players to come in and play. It's just going to take some time. But I'm here. I'm affiliated now with Thuzio, which is a site you go on and connect you back with your fans. Fans can come on Thuzio and see what I'm doing, and also get me appearances. I can come speaking engagements. You can come have dinner with me. You can my workouts, just different things. It's a great site. It's a great idea to have, especially with a lot of retired players, on how they can get to us. Because some of them guys that didn't maybe have the career that I had, the popularity, get lost. And then by them hitting on Thuzio, they can find out, hey, my favorite, Celtic, my favorite net, my favorite whatever. You go, oh, that's Kenny Anderson. He's on there. Maybe I can get him to come speak. So speak an engagement. So come do a workout or come to a camp, clinic. So it's a very, very good site to go on to book your favorite athlete.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the time today, Kenny. Good luck with everything in the future, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
All right, good stuff from Kenny Anderson there. Let's talk about the All-Star voting returns. We got our first sample of who the fans want to see in the All-Star game. And, as always, there's going to be some sort of questionable decisions, some questionable guys leading the votes. Let's get into it a little bit here. One piece of good news was that Jeremy Lin is not yet a starter in the backcourt. He does have almost 300,000 votes and is only about 50,000 behind Chris Paul in the first returns. Do you think Jeremy Lin will end up passing Chris Paul and get the required number of votes to end up in that starting lineup?
No, I don't. I generally, guys don't move much. I mean, maybe one guy here and there. And like in the East, you might see Chris Bosh catch Kevin Garnett for that final spot among the front court, because that's actually pretty close. But 50,000 this early is a pretty healthy lead. It's not huge. It's not insurmountable, but it's a pretty healthy lead. And unless there's a huge push from the Far East, I think Chris Paul is in. I don't think Jeremy Lin is carrying the Yao Ming kind of weight that he used to bring, where he didn't play a game and he was the starting center. He's not as good as Yao Ming was when Yao Ming played, and B, I just don't think he has that kind of popularity. And the other part of that is people are starting to come around to the fact that Chris Paul is really, really good.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's, obviously Clippers are on a huge winning streak right now. Wouldn't be there without Chris Paul. The interesting thing about the Lin vote, though, he has 100,000 more votes than James Harden, on his same team. So clearly, it's not because people are watching the Rockets and like what Lin's doing out there, because, Harden's the man in Houston. He's having just an incredible season over there. And then when you look at the front court players, I look at Blake Griffin, but, then again, the All-Star game itself is such an exhibition, a lot of lobs and alley-oops, and, the fans want to see Blake Griffin and those monster dunks in that type of game, so you can't really fault them for voting him in. And then when you look below Griffin, it's like, well, who else do you want in? You want Tim Duncan in there shooting bang shots? What are you kind of looking for out of that game? But nothing else really jumped out at me out west. What about you?
No, exactly. I mean, like you said, it's an exhibition. It's a show. If you're saying this is a pure merit, who's the better player this season thing, Tim Duncan should be in over Blake Griffin. But it's not. That's not what it's about.
Right.
And by the way, Tim Duncan, more than happy to not get your vote. More than happy to then hopefully not get picked by the coaches. He would love to not have the responsibility of playing that weekend. He'd rather put his feet up and rest somewhere.
Yeah, and Laker fans should just start a campaign to vote Tim Duncan into the All-Star game, right?
Exactly. Everybody but their guys except Kobe. Let's get everybody some rest.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's turn our attention out east. Looking at the votes out there, you know, you could kind of quibble about Kevin Garnett over Chris Bosch. Like you mentioned before, that's a pretty close race. Bosch could end up taking over that spot. The one thing that just jumps out like crazy to me is that we have Anderson Barrichello, who's just having an amazing season. He's leading the league in rebounding with almost 15 per game. He's not in the top 10 of votes. I think he's 12th behind Shane Battier.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think, hey, nobody's watching Cleveland, especially when Kyrie Irving was out. But I don't think people realize how good he is and how well he is playing this year. He has been one of the best big men in the NBA, period. Maybe the best center in the East, you know, with Andrew Bynum not playing. And by the way, Andrew Bynum, 68,000 votes for having never set foot on the court. Joining, it's my favorite part of the list. Stoudemire, Dirk Nowitzki, and Ricky Rubio, all got more than 50,000 votes, and none of them has set foot on a court this year.
How many votes did Steve Nash have?
Yeah, again, another guy who was just out of the mix. Yeah, and at least he played two whole games.
And by the way, I like Rick Rubio. I think, you know, he sounds like sort of like an international sort of James Bond type, Rick Rubio. I think we should, you know, sort of lobby to rename him that.
Yeah, it gives him a whole Casablanca thing.
Exactly. Anything else in the Eastern Conference, you know, on that voting sort of stand out to you?
No, I think that the East is where you see the center issue when they took centers off the ballot and made it three front court players. In the West, you've still got Dwight Howard making it, and you can, again, that's a question you can debate, but he's put up really good numbers and he's not 100% and the fans want to see him. But in the East, you're not seeing the real centers get in, you know, which would probably be Tyson Chandler, but you're seeing instead Chris Bosh and Kevin Garnett, who are playing the five spot, getting in because that's what the fans want to see. And I think that that's why they did this. I think in the East, you see a better reflection of where the game is evolving to. I mean, there'll always be a spot for really good traditional centers, but I think you're going to see a lot more of the Kevin Garnetts and Chris Bosh type centers in the game. And so I like the move by the NBA. I feel bad for Tyson Chandler, who's actually played pretty well, but, you know, those are the breaks, kid.
Well, and he could still get on the roster, you know, voted in as a reserve by the coaches. You know, Barrichello will make the team. There's no question that he's not going to be left off the team. Who else might be a first-year All-Star this year that you see?
Yeah, that's a good one. What about guys like Steph Curry out West, who's played, you know, really fantastic basketball? He's one that leapt out at me where I would like to see him get rewarded as a guy who's really kind of improved his game and really stepped up his game. Because right now, the West in particular, the starting five would actually be, if it doesn't change, would be the exact same starting five for last year. So I'm hoping to see some other reserves. Who are you looking to see?
I'm looking at O.J. Mayo from Dallas. I mean, he's really just carried that team with Dirk Nowitzki out. From a scoring standpoint, he's had like a 40-point game recently, outdueled James Harden when they played in Houston. So I really think this is the season for O.J. Mayo to get in as a reserve.
Yeah, and Harden would also be a first-timer, and I would have no problem. I mean, he missed some time with injury, but I would have no problem with that either.
All right, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave some comments, let us know how we're doing. And Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next week.
Thanks a lot, everybody.